This evening's scripture is taken from Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 through 7. But when the fulfillment of the time came, God sent his son, born through a woman and born under the law. This was so he could redeem those under the law so that we could be adopted. Because you are sons and daughters, God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son or daughter. And if you are his child, then you are also an heir through God. This is the word of God for the people of God. Please be seated.
Well, good evening, folks. And I want to add my welcome to Pastor Erica's. My name is Chris Abel, and I'm our lead pastor here for and have been for the last few months. And Merry Christmas, everyone. I'm so glad that we have a chance to gather together right before this beautiful holiday and add a little more meaning and depth to this Christmas. And so I'm glad that you're here, and I hope you get something meaningful out of today's service. Now, for most of us, Christmas is one of the best times of the year. It is a highlight for a lot of us. We get together with family or with friends. We eat some delicious food. We have the exchanging of gifts, which I have to be honest, sometimes we kind of just say that kids like that, but I like that a little bit too. I don't know about you. This is Christmas. But the truth is that Christmas wasn't necessarily written down right away. Think about this. Like, how do we know the Christmas story happened? Did Mary go and scrapbook that evening? And then that's how we know it happened. Did Joseph go and make like a family YouTube blog and then record all the things that were going on? Did the Magi go and, you know, go back home and write down philosophical reflections on that Christmas evening? Did the shepherds go and have a party so big that it made the Jerusalem Times the next morning? Like, how do we actually know about the Christmas story? Have you ever thought about this? Well, the truth is that we know about the Christmas story not because Mary wrote it down that night. In fact, not only was it not written down that night, it wasn't written down throughout Jesus' childhood. It wasn't written down throughout Jesus' lifetime. It actually was decades and decades and decades later. We have the Christmas story because of two men named Matthew and Luke. And if you've grown up in church and grown up in Sunday school, you'd probably be familiar with both of those names. And you might even know that Matthew was one of Jesus' disciples. And so the book we call Matthew is a letter that Matthew wrote to the church of his day. And he took a little bit of time explaining his own, the experiences that he had with Christ, including probably hanging out with Jesus, hearing about his childhood, hanging out with Jesus' mother, hanging out with his brothers and sisters. And he got a first eye witness of the stories and the life of Jesus, and so had an opportunity to write that down. But Luke wasn't a disciple. In fact, we're not even sure if Luke spent any time with Jesus at all. Luke, from what we know and what scholars have been able to piece together, was a physician, and we only know that because Paul wrote about Luke. He was a physician who lived in the first century. He was most likely from a Greek background, not a Jewish background. And he wrote not only pieces of the Christmas story, but we actually have an insight into why he wrote the Christmas story down. We have insight into why he wrote it down. And he actually says it right in the beginning of the book that we call Luke, which is really just a letter. This is how Luke starts. He says this: many people have already applied themselves to the task of compiling an account of the events that have been fulfilled among us. They used what the original eyewitnesses and servants of the word handed down to us. Now, after having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, he's talking about himself there, I have also decided to write a carefully ordered account for you, the most honorable Theophilus. I want you to have confidence in the soundness of the instruction you have received. It's kind of interesting, huh? Luke introduces his letter by saying, I've done a lot of research here, and I want you to know the real story. Now, we don't think about this when we think about the Christmas story. We don't think about how Luke put on his journalist hat and went on sleuthing the true origins of Jesus' birth. But this is essentially why we have this story, is someone who was on the fringes of the story went and interviewed and researched and spoke to people. This isn't something that he just made up and wrote down. He went and spoke to physical, real people who lived in the real world. This is sometimes, I think, we take the Christmas story, we put it in the same camp as stories about Santa. Luke actually went and interviewed people. This is how he put this story together. He probably spoke to Mary, Jesus' mother, and asked her about that night. He probably spoke to Jesus' brothers and sisters. We know four of their names, actually, from the Bible. And it is, I don't know them off the top of my head, so I'm not actually that good of a theologian here. But I think it's like Jude and James and Joseph and Simon. And I love this imagery of him, of Luke, like, I'm like, so Jude, tell me about, you know, Christmas. And he's like, ugh. He's like, Christmas is the worst. Every December 25th, mom has to go and get the incense out and tell us about how special Jesus is. And Jesus looks all smug, and then, you know, we go and he gets more presents. They would not necessarily have the same experience of Christmas that we have. But he talked to his brothers. He most likely spoke to many of the disciples and interviewed them and heard any stories that they may have picked up. He pieced this story together from as many sources as he could find so that we could know the Christmas story. By the way, Theophilus, we're not sure if this is a real person or if this is Theophilus means friend of God. It's what it means translated. So it could mean us reading the letter. It could also mean just an honorary title of someone. So we really have no idea who this letter was written to, but we know Luke's intentions and why he wrote what we know as the Christmas story. Now here's the thing though. Luke and Matthew could have easily skipped over the story that we have come to know from every Christmas. He could have easily skipped over, summarized, and moved on to the good stuff. Nobody likes baby stories. Maybe you guys do. But they went to get to the juicy stuff. What did Jesus do? Well, you know, they went to hear about the adult Jesus. And yet, they took the time to look at characters that most of us would have skipped over, thought as unimportant, and maybe never have written down if we were the ones who wrote the story. Luke wrote about shepherds. He wrote about these shepherds and how they were this lowest rung of society and how no one respected shepherds. In fact, if you've been to church in the last couple of weeks, we talked about shepherds. And shepherds, they weren't, their word was so untrustworthy that they weren't even allowed to, their testimony wasn't admissible in court because no one trusted shepherds. They were seen as crooks. And yet, angels appear and give a message of hope to the people who are the least likely to be listened to. And then you have Matthew who talks about the Magi. And if we think about this, we talk about the three kings from Orient Ar, and we sing hymns about this. But the Magi were pagan mystics from another religion in another land who somehow had keyed into what God was doing and entered Bethlehem right under the noses of the religious leaders who were so confident they knew what God was doing. And somehow they missed it, and outsiders got it. That's problematic even today. What do we do with that? And then we have Luke who talks about Mary and sheds more light on Mary's life in the Christmas story than anything we get anywhere else in the Bible. And he talks about this young woman who stood toe-to-toe with an angel who had made grown men pass out previously in the Bible. It's true, it's in the book of Daniel. You can go back and listen to that sermon last week. Or I guess that was 3 days ago, so... it's a lot of church this week for some of you guys. But Luke helps us understand how powerful of a person that Mary was. And Matthew tells the story of Joseph and how Joseph was this guy who was engaged to this gal, and all of a sudden she's pregnant. And before he really understands the whole story, he's trying to figure out what to do. And yet in a moment where he could be wrathful or vengeant or be hurt, Joseph, in this moment, keeps his integrity intact and instead tries to tastefully separate from her so that she doesn't have to face any more embarrassment than she would have already faced being a single mom in that day and age. They cover stories and details about these lives that they didn't have to cover, that they didn't have to record. These people and many other strange cast members make up the actual Christmas story. And there's a reason that Luke and Matthew actually focus on these side characters. And it's because Luke and Matthew followed the teachings of Jesus. Luke and Matthew followed their Lord, their friend, and they would have known that Jesus lived a life of paying attention to side characters. When Jesus met people, he didn't see them the way that everybody else saw them. He saw a person for their potential. He saw a person for the way that their life could make a difference. He saw a person the way a loving father would look at a child and cheer them on to success. When it came to Jesus, there were no side characters. Everyone mattered to Jesus. And Luke and John knew Jesus well enough to know that Jesus wouldn't have left these people out of the story. And they wouldn't leave out the people that Jesus wouldn't have left out. And that's why we have the Christmas story. It's because Christ believed in people everyone else overlooked. And you know what? It feels really good when someone sees potential in you. There is nothing quite the feeling when someone really believes in you. In fact, even hearing these words, "I believe in you," even just seeing that makes some dopamine fire off in my head. Like, I like hearing this stuff. I'm a words of affirmation person. And maybe some of you need to hear this phrase too. Beth, my girlfriend, and I have gotten in this habit. This is really embarrassing what I'm about to share with you. We've started singing this song to each other a few times a week. It's by Brett Denon, and the lyrics are, "Don't forget that I believe in you. Should you forget, let me remind you, I am behind you." And we do it in like these little baby voices and like singing back and forth. And I would be humiliated if you ever caught me in this moment. But initially it started out as like this kind of cutesy joke, and now we kind of do it because it's like nice. It's nice to hear those words from someone who cares about you. Not only when they're sung to you, but it's nice because no matter who you are, it can be really easy to forget that you matter. It can be really easy in this world to forget that your life matters. Life and people can beat us down. Life can exhaust you, it can hurt you, it can abandon you. And that's not even taking into consideration all of the mistakes that we can make in our own lives that get ourselves into trouble and make us feel less than worthwhile. And you know what? And here's what I want you to hear tonight. These kinds of feelings don't go away just because it's Christmas. When we wrestle with these things, they don't go away just because this is supposed to be a happy time of the year. These things stick with us. And this reality is why my favorite Christmas movie, I'm not sure some of you will be surprised by this, but I don't know. My favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life. Now, some of you have heard this. I found out today Pastor Eric has never seen this. Sorry to call you out on this. Maybe some of you are with her. You've never seen this. This movie is about to be 75 years old, which blows my mind. But I love the story of It's a Wonderful Life. It's about the life of this guy, George Bailey. Now, Jimmy Stewart is the actor who plays him. And Jimmy Stewart went, and a few years ago, he actually summarized it really nicely. He said this about the story of It's a Wonderful Life. He said, "The character I played was George Bailey, an ordinary fella who thinks he's never accomplished anything in life. He dreams of his dreams of becoming a famous architect, of living adventurously, have not been fulfilled. Instead, he feels trapped in a humdrum job in a small town. And when faced with a crisis in which he feels he has failed everyone, he breaks under the strain and he flees to the bridge." This movie does a fantastic job of showing us that life doesn't stop because it's Christmas. And that our doubts and insecurities and problems, they come with us even this time of year. And at one point, you can see all of this build up in George's life. And I don't want to spoil the movie for you guys, but it's been out for 75 years. So we're going to see some clips here tonight. So George just cracks under this pressure. He's not sure what's going to happen. His problems have caught up with him. And he just cracks in front of the people who he loves the most. Here's the clip. You can feel the stress and the pressure and the heartbreak in George Bailey. Years of regret and stress just build up in this moment. Can you imagine what he feels like looking out at his kids and them have fear in their eyes at what he's just done? And he tries to apologize, but he just gets frustrated again. And George just feels like a failure, not only at work and in his life, but now he feels like a failure at home. And the only thing he can think to do is to leave and to go look for help in the bottom of a glass. Except when he goes to the bar, he happens to have something else go on. Here's the clip. By the way, that scene, it was done in kind of one take, and the director loved that moment so much that he realized that he couldn't capture that kind of raw emotion. And so they went back to one of the editors, and they had to figure out a new technology in order to zoom in so they could get that angle on the film. Well, Jimmy Stewart, years later, reflected on what made that so powerful, and he said this, as I said those words, I felt the loneliness, the hopelessness of people who had nowhere to turn. And my eyes filled with tears, and I broke down sobbing. This was not planned at all. But the power of that prayer, the realization that our Father in heaven is there to help the hopeless, it reduced me to tears. George then, the story goes on, he gets punched in the face by a teacher's husband who he just insulted while he was back at home. He leaves the bar and he drunkenly crashes his car, and it looks like he's just hit rock bottom. At this point, he believes the world would just be better without him. And so he goes to the bridge and he prepares to throw himself over and throw his life away. Now, maybe you haven't had a bridge moment like George Bailey has in this dramatization, but it's likely that you've had moments in your life when you thought that you haven't mattered much. You felt like you've messed things up, like you've lost good things in your life, that others would be better if you weren't here. Now, we all get in ruts, and we question whether or not our lives make a difference, if what we're really doing matters, if anyone really truly loves us, if we matter. And I wish every single one of us got to experience what George got to experience next. See, as he was preparing to jump into the bridge, someone else throws himself into the water, and George's good instincts kick in, and he jumps in, ironically, not to take his own life, but to save someone else's. Well, he finds out that he's just saved, and it's an interesting twist from how dark the movie has been up to this point, his guardian angel, Clarence. George is a little skeptical at first about this, but Clarence tells him that he's gotten his wish, that God has answered that prayer in the bar, and George now lives in a world where he never existed. George thinks this is ridiculous. He's in an alternate reality. This is sci-fi before there was sci-fi. And yet, he begins to be convinced when he sees what the world would have been without his life in it. He gets to see that in a way that none of us have been able to see it. He finds out that his mother now is a bitter shell of a person because she never had him as a son, and her other son ended up passing away. His kids don't exist. His wife never married. The town is in shambles because no one stood up to the corrupt Mr. Potter that caused a lot of his problems in his own life. And he found out all sorts of things were different because he wasn't there to make them different. And everything comes to the climax when George finally heads to the graveyard and he stumbles into the cemetery, and he realizes that in this world, no one was there to save his brother. Check out this clip. See, George assumed that life would have been better for other people if he had never been there at all. But then he saw the way that his life had mattered even to just a few people that he cared about. Clarence, his angel, says this soon after. He says this, "Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many others' lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?" And this isn't just an idea that belongs to Clarence or to a movie made 75 years ago. This is an idea that was central to Jesus' ministry. The people who were attracted to Jesus lived in a time when religion and politics went to great lengths to make people feel small and insignificant. Life was hard. Religion offered no real hope. And in this setting, Jesus had a message that was entirely countercultural, a message that God was not done with people, no matter what they had done, that God wasn't going to just send a king to fix things politically, but so believed in people that he invited them to use their lives for something greater than themselves. Jesus brought a message of hope for people like George Bailey, for people like the shepherds, for people like the Magi, for people like young Marys, like people like Joseph, for people like us. The church spread because people needed to hear that their lives matter. And when you realize that your life matters, it changes things. And it did for George. Watch what happened. I love this moment in the movie because he finally realizes the impact that his life has. Nothing else has changed in George's life. He comes back to that moment and God didn't fix anything. His problems are still there. His enemies are still there. His issues are still there. His stresses are still there. Nothing changes except George, except the way that he sees his own life, the way that he sees that it matters. And the same thing happens with the message of Jesus that came to this world 2,000 years ago. It spread everywhere. It spread over 2,000 years to billions of people because people need to know that their lives matter. Paul, who'd never met Jesus either, at least had a vision of him, never met him in the flesh, Paul became a Christian who wrote most of the New Testament, who spread the church all over the known world in the first century. When he was telling people this message of hope, here's how he put it. He put it like this: "But when the fulfillment of the time came, God sent his son, born through a woman," which is him basically saying, God chose us, chose people, "and born under the law. This was so that he could redeem those under the law," when he's talking about Judaism, but really all people, "so that we could be adopted." It's kind of interesting language. "Because you are sons and daughters, and God sent the Spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father," meaning we cry out to God just like George Bailey did. "And therefore, you are no longer a slave, but you are a son or a daughter. And if you are his child, then you are also an heir through God." What Paul was essentially saying is, you're not a nobody. To God, you are like a son or a daughter to the creator of the universe. And your life matters to God. And you know what? A lot of churches, we do a bad job of the good news. We do a bad job of making people realize that their lives matter. And I think that's why people are easily walking away from churches. But in the first century, they did a really good job of helping people understand that their lives mattered to God. And that movement spread and people bought in until it reached this entire planet. The message, though, is still the same. That on that day, 2,000 years ago, the core of Christmas and the core of Christianity is that our lives aren't worthless, we're not side characters, but that God so loved us that he came for us to tell us that you and I are sons and daughters of God. And so this Christmas, may you remember and realize that you matter to God. Would you pray with me? God, we're so grateful for this Christmas Eve and for the chance and opportunity we've had to realize that you love us and that we matter. And so, God, we ask you to be with us tonight. And in this holiday, help us not just to be another thing on our plate, not to feel stressed that we need to be joyous, but realize that life comes with us into tomorrow morning. But help us remember that we're not alone and you love us. In your name we pray. Amen.